This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You're listening to the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. And now, it's the Game Day Roundtable, brought to you by Dunn Tire, the official tire of the Buffalo Bills. Here's Chris Brown, Eric Wood, and your host, Sal Capaccio.
We are getting you ready for a 1 p.m. kickoff between the Buffalo Bills at the Miami Dolphins with John Murphy and Eric Wood calling the play-by-play from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth. Today's game is presented by Independent Health. The red shirts are all about your health. Sal Capaccio down here right on the field. We have Eric Wood and Chris Brown ready to bring you the Dunn Tire Roundtable. We will get to that in just a moment, but first, Miami weather, and that is brought to you by Sullivan's Brewing Company from Ireland to Buffalo, the best ales in the world. And of course, when you talk about Miami weather, especially in September, we're talking about heat and humidity. And that's what we have right now on the field where I'm standing, a very big difference in the sun and in the shade. Now, this time of year, the sun, as of right now, actually is on both benches. The shade is on the 20-yard line going in on one side of the field. The rest of the field is all in the sun. It is hot. It is muggy. It is humid. It is 88 degrees right now. However, there is a chance of showers. In fact, about a 50% chance once we get to kickoff at 1 p.m. And the temperature is actually supposed to decrease with a little front coming through there at the time. And we could even get into the low 80s from the high 80s at that time. So we'll see how the weather, how the rain reacts, how the temperature reacts to that. But of course, it is always a storyline when the Buffalo Bills are playing in Miami, no matter when, but especially in September. It is the Dunn Tire Roundtable. Sal Capaccio here, Chris Brown, Eric Wood up in the booth. And the Dunn Tire Roundtable is brought to you by Dunn Tire, the official tire of the Buffalo Bills. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome back into another edition of the Roundtable. Good to hear from both of you. And here we are at our first road game of the year. But look, it's Miami week, right? And I spent some time on the air on our flagship station, WGR Sports Radio 550, earlier this week, talking about Miami week and what it means to Bills fans. I grew up in Buffalo. I know what Miami week means. To fans, this is the game. There's no such thing as New England week or New York Jets week. It's Miami week. So, Chris Brown, I know you know all about it. I want to get to you in a minute, but let's start with you, Eric, and ask you, from a player's perspective, did you know what Miami week meant and how much did that factor into how you thought about this?
Yeah, we knew that it meant a lot to the fans and all those rivalries between Kelly and Marino. And going back through the ages, we would hear all about it. And, you know, throughout my time in Buffalo, Miami wasn't a top of the division. That was always New England. That's who we were all chasing. But we understood the significance of playing the Miami Dolphins. And as I sit here in the booth and look out at the stadium, my lasting memory of this stadium and this team will always be that 2017 New Year's Eve game to get us into the playoffs.
And, of course, what a great memory that is because, as you said, if you're going to do it here in Miami to actually have the celebration in this stadium as they did, Chris. We all remember that day when the Buffalo Bills made the playoffs at the end of 2017. Andy Dalton with the pass. There's videos, viral videos of all the people in the stands here. We're going to see that here, and that's another thing about this, Chris, which is a big Buffalo contingent of crowd of fans likes to come down here. But you've covered this team long enough. You know what Miami week is about to Bills fans.
Yeah, it's big, and I think it was lost a little bit, as Eric mentioned, with the dominance and the hold that, you know, New England had on this division for the better part of two decades. It kind of slipped into the background and was not at the forefront since, you know, Tom Brady and the Patriots were public enemy number one for a long time. It's possible that it could vacillate back towards Miami here, but I think it's going to largely depend on how these young quarterbacks for each of these respective teams matures over the next year or so. I mean, you could have just as many problems with New England if Mac Jones continues to come on after a nice debut performance last week against this Dolphins team. Or does Tua kind of become the number one rival quarterback-wise in this division with Josh Allen. That's what I think has to unfold here, because as we all know, yes, the dominance in the 70s by the Dolphins is what started this whole thing for Bills fans, but the Kelly Marino thing really took it to another level. And I'm wondering if that has the potential to happen now somewhere in this division with these young quarterbacks that are coming in.
Yeah, I agree with that. We'll talk about both quarterbacks. We'll get to Tua a little bit later. Eric, who's the rivalry at Louisville? Has it always been the same team?
Yeah, it's generally Kentucky. And then you'll have, you know, conference rivalries that'll come together. When I was there, us and West Virginia were the two best teams in the Big East, so that became our biggest rival.
So did they call it Kentucky Week? Did they do that? Like in Louisville, is that Kentucky Week?
I mean, it's almost Kentucky all year because you have the basketball and the football game, and there's so much contention in the state, and it's, you know, in Louisville, it's probably a 50-50 split.
By the way, I mean, not for nothing, right? I mean, how about that ending the other night for your alma mater? Congratulations. What a big win that was. What a great ending that was to the game, Louisville on primetime, right? But primetime games all over the NFL, too, this week. What a week we've seen in the NFL, including capping it off in college with your team. But this has been a great week, week one in the NFL, Eric.
It has been. In that game Thursday night, I was really looking forward to watching my buddy Ryan Fitzpatrick square off against one of my other really close friends, Kyle Rudolph for the Giants, and unfortunately Fitz got hurt. But, yeah, that was a wild ending. It reminded me back if anybody was watching Big East football back in 2006 when Will Gay, who ended up playing about 10 years for the Steelers, our cornerback jumped off sides, gave Rutgers an extra kick at the end of the game to beat us. And, man, watching the replays over and over of Lawrence the other night for the Giants, It's so hard to tell if he jumped off sides or not.
All right, so the Bills last week, speaking of week one, dropped one to the Pittsburgh Steelers, Chris Brown, 0-1. Look, big picture, not to panic is what Micah Hyde said and Jordan Poyer. They said to the media as they were walking out of their press conference after Sunday's game, a lot of football to be played. Jordan followed it up with don't panic. I think a lot of Bills fans are a little bit on edge, right? Because you can't drop this one to go 0-2, and especially against a division rival in the Miami Dolphins to go to that would be 2-0 and have the head-to-head. That's why this one's critical.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question it's a critical game. I think the other thing, too, is you drop this one, you're also 0-2 in the conference.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you're already playing catch-up after 2 weeks, the conference record, as we know, comes very early in the tie-breaking scenarios. So, you know, I don't think, you know, you need people going into full-blown panic and running around like their hair's on fire. But at the same time, what works in Buffalo's favor, you have the extra seed in the AFC, number one, and you have the extra game to make up some ground as well. So those are two things that work to the advantage of maybe a team that gets a little slow out of the gate. But I'm expecting a big bounce-back performance from this team today. I think they get things right. You know, we heard the players talk all week, guys, about how they feel. You always learn more after a loss than you do after a win. I mean, Josh was even saying we're focusing on some things now that maybe we would not have focused on had we won the football game. So I'm expecting a much more, I don't want to say airtight, but I think a much more consistent performance from an execution standpoint than anything else today. And I think that's really what proved to be the biggest issue in last week's game. A lot of self-inflicted wounds.
And especially on the offensive line. So, Eric, obviously, let's get your perspective on what you saw last week and how this group bounces back. 5 holding calls, 3 on Deion Dawkins alone. He spoke later in the week about COVID still impacting him and the situation he went through, which we all heard about last month, which is pretty incredible, and really glad that Deion's okay. But he's going to be fighting through this all year. But, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they did a good job to put pressure on and get after the Buffalo Bills on the offensive line. Where's your concern for that group right now?
Well, anytime you come out of a game and the offensive line is the focal point, that's not usually a good thing. You know, you do your job up front and all the skill guys get all the credit. But when you come out of the game and everybody's talking about how much pressure that the Pittsburgh Steelers defensive line and their pass rushers were able to generate on Josh Allen without blitzing, you know, with 3- and 4-man rushes, there is concern. And John Feliciano struggled a bit in pass protection last year, and he had a tough matchup against Cam Hayward, and his prior matchup was in the AFC Championship game against Chris Jones. So those are two really tough matchups, and those are your two lasting memories of him. But, you know, there's some concern. He dropped some weight in the offseason. Can he win one-on-one pass-blocking matchups? I think one bright spot that came out of the game was Cody Ford seemed to have separated himself from Ike Butker. And, you know, where this rotation, maybe they continue the rotation in Miami today. Maybe the weather plays a key in that. If they've been rotating all along, and Cody Ford's not used to taking 100% of the snaps. Maybe Miami and the heat and humidity isn't the time to do it, but I thought he played well. But when you look at the tackles, you know, Darrell Williams is taking a lot of criticism. I didn't think he played that bad last week, honestly, all things considered, with as many pass rush snaps as he had against T.J. Watt, who's phenomenal. With Deion Dawkins, you know, we came out of the Chicago preseason game in the Green Bay game, and we thought, okay, well, Deion got his reps. He looks like the Deion of old, but preseason's a different speed, and Deion missed a lot of training camp. Physically, he's not 100%, probably still, and so they may need to do things early in the season, whether it's chip with running backs, whether it is maybe give him some tight end help, which they're not used to doing because Deion's been so good in the early part of his career. They're not used to doing those things for Deion, so we're going to see what they do today. I thought another thing last week, the Bills ran a ton of just five-man protections where it's just the offensive line up front. And in those situations, you know, as an offensive lineman, you know that the ball is going to come out. And it doesn't change necessarily how you pass block. It's just a very tough position to be in. And not always last week did that ball come out super fast because the Steelers were playing so much coverage and not doing what they generally do. Keith Butler, the defensive coordinator for the Steelers, is always top five in pressure percentage. And last week, one of the lowest in the league. So it caught – you know, it probably slowed Josh Allen a bit in his decision-making as well, which is going to lead to more pressures, you know, that we saw in the game.
Great perspective there about the offensive line. Appreciate that from Eric Wood. Obviously played center in this league for a long time for the Buffalo Bills. And as I look out, I see Deion Dawkins in front of me, guys. He is walking the field right now. It's very, very sunny on 80 yards and 90, if you include the end zone of the field, and then the other 20, and then the end zone on this side where I'm standing right now, which is on the Bills sideline on the left side. It's all shade, so it's going to play into the factor of the game today, of course. And with Deion's situation, you do wonder, you know, how they're going to monitor him going forward. And that's the other thing people have asked me this week, Chris. I'm sure they've asked you, like, well, do you rotate him in if he struggles? And I think that might have to depend on what it looks like. What's the struggle? Is it due to conditioning? Is it due to play? I mean, your other option is Spencer Brown, who's a rookie, and I don't know what you really want to do there.
No, you're exactly right. I don't think you want to just throw Spencer Brown in there because Deion Dawkins is a much better player than when Spencer's in there. But when you run no huddle a lot of times like the Bills do, that can often impact it as well. So maybe the Bills slow down their pace a bit today to give him a little extra time to catch his wind and be in between plays. You know, as an offensive lineman, my philosophy always was the faster we go, the more tired the D-line gets, and we keep them on the field because they can't rotate out unless we switch our personnel. So I'm always in favor of going fast, but I was never coming off of a COVID situation like Deion is.
Yeah, and Chris, that's the tricky thing because, you know, I think if you remember Von Miller last year when he had COVID, he said – he was back on the field 3-4 weeks and still didn't feel 100% right. We have to remember at its core, COVID is a respiratory virus. And, you know, you got a 300-plus pound man moving at a, you know, at a high rate, you know, highest rate of intensity and exertion for 7, 8, 9 seconds every single play, every 30, 40 seconds. I mean, it adds up. It takes a toll, especially if you're not all the way back to where you normally are conditioning-wise. Now add some heat and humidity today.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's an extra factor to consider here. So, yeah, I think they may have to keep an eye on that and monitor his effectiveness. And if Spencer Brown has to come in even for just 2 or 3 snaps, maybe you do it. And I think the reason why you might feel more comfortable doing it this week, yeah, you have Emmanuel Ogba over there on that side. He had 9 sacks last year, led the Dolphins. But what you don't have, I think, up front is a true – speed, bend the edge rusher from this defensive front for Miami. And I think that might play favorably into letting the Bills say, all right, for a snap or two, we can put Brown out there. He's not going to kill us. He's a young player. He's inexperienced. We're on the road. He's got to deal with noise. But we need consistent play there. We can't have a guy have a whiff out there because he's exhausted. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they monitor that and what moves they determine they have to make if Deion is gassed at a particular point in this game today.
And one more point on that. You know, you also have to give credit to the Pittsburgh Steelers pass rush. And I mentioned specifically Cam Hayward and T.J. Watt. But Melvin Ingram might be one of the most underrated pass rushers in the NFL. And one of the things that have has hurt his career, where he might not be a complete household name, is injury situation. Well, it's week one last week. Yeah, Melvin Ingram in his ninth year, he's as fresh as you could possibly be, and that's a very tough matchup for Deion Dawkins. So I don't want to sound like Aaron Rodgers last year with the relax press conference, but similar to what Micah Hyde and Jordan Poirier were saying about the overall state of the Bills, not panicking about, you know, what they saw in week one. I also think you have to take that approach with the offensive line. We didn't see a lot of play action last week. I think we'll see more of that as well, which helps the offensive line. It slows down the defensive line because they get that initial run read. And I also thought the Bills, you know, especially in the second half, ran the ball well. Devin Singletary over 6 yards per carry. Well, you have to give the offensive line some credit there as well.
Chris, special teams hurt the Bills last week. It started off great, obviously, with the return from Isaiah McKenzie. They didn't cash in, but obviously the big punt block for a touchdown, and that's something that I'm sure that Sean McDermott, his staff, and he said that, you know, they went back and looked at a lot, and they're going to correct some things. Now they're facing a team that they are not shy, this team, of pulling out some special teams chicanery or something like that. We saw Danny Crossman, former Bills special teams coach now here in Miami, we saw him fake a field goal 2 years ago in Buffalo that worked. Eventually, Tre'Davious White had that pick at the goal line like a play or two later. Mm-hmm. But, man, they got to be buttoned up today in that area.
They do, because what the Dolphins do is they know who they are. They're not a major point-producing team on offense, so they have to try to find other ways to manufacture points. Last year, they did it with takeaways on defense. And I think they do look for those kinds of opportunities on special teams to create favorable field position situations for their offense by either getting the ball back on a turnover or somehow, or getting points on their own, either in the return game or something else. So they're not shy about being aggressive in that area of their game. And Danny Crossman, as we know, is a veteran special teams coach. So, yeah, they have to be minding their P's and Q's. You know, being out here at practice on Friday, guys, the first period of practice after, you know, stretch and everything, and individual drills, extended special teams session, like 25 minutes, like really long. I just think it's been addressed. It's been overemphasized this week because that ultimately cost them the game last week. I mean, let's face facts. That really was the difference in the game last week.
We've spent so much time talking about the negatives because it's a loss. That's what happens, right? And what's wrong with the offense? What's wrong with the offensive line? But, man, guys, the defense played really well last week. So let's start talking about some positives from last week. The defense, Eric, I mean, this run defense last week did a phenomenal job against a Pittsburgh team that wanted to run the ball. They were the worst run team in the league last year. I understand that. They also ran for less yards than they even averaged last year with only 75 on the ground.
Yeah, the rush defense was incredible. That's a great bright spot in the Bills last year. If you're nitpicking their defense, you're going to say, you know, the yards per carry that they gave up last year was not acceptable. And then they hold Pittsburgh in their new toy, Najee Harris, that they were so excited to unveil and get him going. They treated him like a rookie, you know, and they really shut him down. They only gave up 3.6 yards per carry on the day last week. I thought, when I went back and looked at the tape, I thought Ed Oliver played excellent. Yes. His get-off, he was just disruptive. And, you know, we've constantly heard from Leslie Frazier that Ed Oliver does the little things, you know, and at the defensive tackle position, you know, you're not going to flash. But as a top 10 pick, and after you watch Kyle Williams at that three technique make so many plays over the years, you expected to see that from Ed Oliver, and we got to see it last week. I thought he was excellent. I thought the defensive ends were physical in the run game as well. And that Bills D-line that was built up so much through the preseason, we got to see him on display in the three preseason games be disruptive. They were disruptive again last week. Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano both played a lot of last year, dinged up. I thought they both looked excellent. And then, as always, if you're going to play corner or safety in a Sean McDermott defense, you've got to be able to tackle, and those guys were physical as well, and that's a great sign. And if the Bills can force teams to constantly be in third and long situations, second and long situations based upon their run defense, I think you're going to see even more production in the sack numbers this year, and it'll start to escalate. We saw two last week. It wouldn't surprise me to see, you know, closer to maybe four today.
Chris, who stood out for you on the defensive side? I know Eric ran through some guys here, but who really kind of stepped up their game, stood out, maybe didn't get enough love, if you will, throughout the week because of the result of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I like the team's red zone defense. That was a problem last year, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
yep.
Especially on the road, the scoring percentage, scoring efficiency, touchdown efficiency in the red zone for their opponents when the Bills were on the road last year was 70%. I mean, that's an enormous figure. It kind of went by the board because the Bills were scoring so many points of their own. But if the Bills' offense is going to have a hiccup like they did last week, They're going to need the defense to play like they did in the red zone last week. And, you know, you look at some of those red zone series. I mean, Milano making that tackle when Najee Harris has him leaning one way and he still makes up the ground to tackle him at the 2-yard line and force them to take a field goal there. That was a huge play. I mean, Taron Johnson in the end zone against a 6'5 Eric Ebron and somehow outleaps him to knock the ball down for a pass breakup in the end zone. I mean, those are really, really good plays. And unfortunately, they get lost in the loss. So I think they just have to keep on keeping on. But I will tell you, the one matchup I am concerned about is actually Taron Johnson and Jaylen Waddle in the slot. I was very impressed with his early separation ability working inside. I thought he was going to be lined up, you know, opposite perhaps Will Fuller as outside receivers, and they might put the bigger Parker in the slot this year. They did not do that. They put Waddle in the slot, and he was effective there. I wasn't sure he was going to be able to do that, but, man, he was very impressive last week. Quick separation, and if he gets away from you, that's a problem. He's going to get yards after the catch, as he proved last week, and we know Taron has had trouble with Tyreek Hill when they line him up in the slot. And I'm not saying that Jaylen Waddle is Tyreek Hill, but the speed is comparable. So he's got to hug close on that backside hip and really be there all the time. If he can't make the pass breakup, he's going to have to make the tackle immediately. Otherwise, he could be getting yards after the catch and keeping the Dolphins' offense on the field.
The other matchup that Bills fans have been pointing to all week that concerns them is also on that side of the ball, and that is how the Dolphins were able to manipulate getting Mike Gesicki, the tight end, matched up against Levi Wallace last year in this stadium. And, Eric, you know, going back 2 years even, I would say Ryan Fitzpatrick picked on Levi Wallace in that game in Buffalo quite a bit. Levi, he didn't play poorly last week, but there were a couple of times where he had the pass interference, whether you agree with the call or not. He had the ball in the end zone. He tipped up in the air. But this matchup, Dolphins, Gesicki, specifically on Wallace, will they try to go back to that again and manipulate the formations to be able to do that?
Yeah, I think so. And they would be smart to do so. But the Dolphins have size at receiver all over the place. When you look at Preston Williams, look at Devontae Parker at 6'3". They got him listed at 6'3". He's a Louisville guy. I mean, he looks every bit of 6'4". And then the tight ends are athletic and tall. And the way the Bills structure their defense, a lot of times you can get those matchups across from Tre'Davious White. And they'll leave Levi Wallace out there. So that is a concern. And we talked about it last year on the broadcast. I talked to Fitz before the game. And he's like, it's not as much that we think that Levi Wallace isn't good. It's just Tre'Davious White is so good, you're always going to go opposite if you have the opportunity.
All right, guys. Tua, second year. Didn't play the whole first year last year. We did get to see him last week against the New England Patriots. Had a modest game. No, numbers weren't terrific off the charts. Didn't really stand out. Seemed more like a game manager, but is that what we're looking at from him? Chris, I mean, what do you see from Tua when you watch him?
Yeah, he's a guy that's dependent on the passing game being a rhythm-type passing game. It's, you know, three-step drop, ball out. That's why I think if the Bills can shut off his first option, which obviously, you know, you can do and be right on a lot of plays with proper film study, if they can shut off that first option, that's when Tua gets in trouble and makes some poor decisions. If you make him a pocket passer and take away his first read, that's when he does some bad things. There was a play last week against the Patriots where they shut off his first route. They hemmed him into the pocket. He threw late over the middle. It should have been an interception, and fortunately for the Dolphins, it was not. But those are the kinds of things you want to make Tua do. You want to force him into those late in the down decisions, because when he's getting the ball out on time and in rhythm, that's when he is most effective at that position. But that's what he is, guys. And I still don't think this offense has advanced to the point where they can be relied on to carry a team to a win. They're a 17 to 23 points a game type of offense right now. They're kind of where the Bills were in 2019. They had not reached critical mass as an offense. So your offense has to be on point today for Buffalo, and your defense has to play like they did last week. If both sides of the ball can do that, they're probably coming out of here with a win, and a win pretty handily.
You know, Eric, when I watched that game against the Patriots, I agree 100% what Chris Brown said about, you know, the first read, but it seemed like they also kind of made his first read super easy with some fakes back there to kind of manipulate where he could go and make that a really open spot for him to throw to. And look, I don't think that's a recipe for building for having a franchise quarterback. You can't say he is now. If that's how they want to build him, that's fine. But, man, the Bills, I think, here in this spot need to take advantage of this quarterback who's still growing.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of talk in you know, it never came from the Dolphins organization, but where there's smoke, there's generally fire, and there's a lot of people with great intel that work in the media space that are connected with these teams. And there was, you know, rumors with Deshaun Watson maybe coming here in the draft. Could the Dolphins draft another quarterback at six when they were drafting this year? So there was a lot of talk of that. So, you know, even internally, I don't think they're completely sold on Tua. Where Tua had a lot of success in college was in the RPO game. You know, obviously Alabama had tremendous talent matchups, tremendous talent advantages on the outside in college, and he was thrown to a lot of open guys. I think your point was spot on, Chris, about taking away his first read, and it becomes tough in the offense coordinators, Godsey and Studsville. For the Dolphins, they understand that's where he's going to excel as well. And so I would expect to see some RPO stuff today. In the red zone, you got to be keen to him running QB read, because he will, you know, last week he ran one in against the Patriots, and you got to be in tune there as well. I think that's a strength of his game. But one thing for a game manager and a guy that will check the ball down, it will get the ball to those running backs, he also will give opportunities. And last week he tries to throw a ball. I don't know if he was throwing it up, or he said he was trying to throw it out of bounds. Well, the Patriots get a pretty easy interception. So if the Bills can take away that first read, create some pressure, I think this is a game where there's going to be opportunities for the secondary to get some turnovers.
Two notes on that. Number one, the leading receiver for the Dolphins last week as far as receptions was their running back, Miles Gaskin, as Eric's pointing out, checking it down. And also, as Eric alluded to, two offensive coordinators for the Miami Dolphins. So interesting how they run their operation over there. It is the Dunn Tire Roundtable. Dunn Tire, the official tire of the Buffalo Bills. We have a lot more on the way, including our inactives and Bills by the numbers. This is the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. We are back here on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. It is the Dunn Tire Roundtable. Dunn Tire, the official tire of the Buffalo Bills. I'm Sal Capaccio. We got Chris Brown and Eric Wood. Also, Hard Rock Stadium, Miami Gardens, Florida. Gentlemen, it is hot down here. Eric, just take us into the preparation for a game like this throughout the week. I think that, you know, us average people who did not play professional sports, you think about hydrating, like, oh yeah, it's Saturday, let's get some fluids in your body. That's not the way it's got to work.
No, you're hydrating all throughout the week. You do not want to let your electrolyte levels, your hydration levels drop at all during the week, because that can play a role in game day. I was a guy that always had to be conscientious of not cramping up on game day. I was a big-time sweater. I was often told that as intense as I would get during games, sometimes that can lead to muscle-like spasms that cause cramping. Long story short, these players are completely aware. Starting literally last Sunday, I asked Sean McDermott, the Bills fans will get to hear it on the pregame interview this week, but I asked Sean McDermott about it, and he said the same thing. You know, that basically starts Sunday night, because when you're playing down in Miami, one of the toughest deals down here is the heat. It's not necessarily overwhelming crowd noise, although when they added the hoods over the top of the stadium, it did make it a louder environment in here. But there's going to be so many Bills fans that it's not necessarily the noise that becomes your biggest exterior element that you have to worry about. It's the heat down here. And one thing Sean McDermott did, and it'll be interesting to see if you could see it on TV today, but what Sean McDermott will do, he'll often have assistants hold up shade screens over the bench area, because you cannot have anything permanent there. You can't have a tent or anything up. So he'll have assistants hold those up, because the Bills sideline will likely at some point, as Sal was alluding, that the shade was mainly on the Dolphins end of the field that they're warming up on now. At some point, the Bills sideline will be in the sun and the Dolphins will not.
All right, let's get to Bills by the numbers, guys. And this is brought to you by Equitable Advisors, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow. The number I'm going to give you is 3, because that represents, in the 6 times Josh Allen has played the Miami Dolphins, Chris Brown, he has won the AFC Player of the Week honors 3 different times. He has owned, if you will, the Miami Dolphins. Why has Josh Allen performed so well against this team?
Because for some reason they decide to keep playing man-to-man coverage and blitzing.
I agree, that's right. Yes, that's right.
Which is going to really be interesting to see if Brian Flores changes his tune, even to some degree through the course of the game today. That's what I'm wondering. Like, do they get away from man-to-man coverage and play more zone, or do they stick to what they believe is their identity defensively? But that's why he's been successful. When there's man coverage, I think it makes sometimes the reads easier for him. I think Brian Daboll helps set him up for that as well. And I don't know, maybe it's something about South Florida, because his numbers down there alone are even better than his overall numbers against the Dolphins. He just likes playing them down there. And, I mean, I think you guys all remember the game he had in 2018 where he didn't win the game. They lose 21-17 because Charles Clay unfortunately dropped the ball at the goal line on, like, one of the last plays of the game. But he put the team on his back in that game. I mean, 9 carries for 135 yards? I mean, that's stupid. And he could still do that now if he needs to. But I think the passing game's advanced to the point where he can have similar type numbers. So Brian Flores, careful. Careful with the man coverage today.
I know we have the Bills inactives. I'll let Chris read those. I'm not sure if we had the Dolphins, so if we do, we can get those to Chris. And of course, all of our inactives every week are brought to you by Excelsior Orthopedics Express. Sideline with a sprain, strain, or break, get to Excelsior Orthopedics Express. Chris Brown with the inactives.
Yeah, so for the Bills, 3 defensive linemen inactive today. F.A. Obata, Boogie Basham, and Harrison Phillips, along with linebacker Andre Smith and offensive tackle Tommy Doyle. So what this means, in essence, is the Bills have a normal rotation of 8 defensive linemen. They had 10 last week. And I think this is an indication, guys, that they knew what needed fixing from week 1 to week 2, and that was addressing their offense. They have all 5 backs up today: Zach Moss, Matt Breida, Tywan Jones, Devin Singletary, and the fullback Reggie Gilliam.
Interesting. Eric, you read anything into that? All 5 backs? I'm stunned. That is something that has not happened in over a year at least.
Yeah, a little stunned. But when you look at it, you know, last week Zach Moss was down. You're not 100% sure if maybe he had some lingering issues from getting dinged up in the preseason, coming off the lower leg injury from last year, hamstring in the preseason. You know, and maybe this week they see an opportunity to get the run game going against this Miami defense. Maybe help out this offensive line a little bit and not stick them with so many pass protection reps in this game.
Sal, I do have the Dolphins in.
Go ahead,
real
Chris.
Quick.
Thank you. Thank you.
Will Fuller, Trill Williams, Noah Igbinoghene, which is a little surprising knowing how much the Bills spread out the defense last week of the Steelers, and they're going to sit down their first-round draft pick from a year ago, or one of their ones. Elijah Campbell, Greg Little, a backup offensive tackle, and Hunter Long. Little's probably sitting because we know that Austin Jackson is back after missing last week on the COVID reserve list.
And Igbinoghene is listed on their depth chart as number 2 outside, not as behind the starters, but the second group of outside corners.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, this is the crazy thing, guys. Right. Justin Coleman, Byron Jones, Xavien Howard, those are your top 3 corners for them. But Igbinoghene and Campbell are 2 corners that are second on the depth chart behind those guys.
Wow. Right.
You got and Trill Williams. So you've got basically Coleman, Jones, Howard, and Nick Needham. Now, Javon Holland played some last week, and he has the athleticism to play some corner if you need him to, and he's got a great nose for the ball. But, man, like true corners, they're going with 4 in this game.
All right. Let's see how this all plays out. Interesting lineup combinations for both teams, I would say, the Bills and the Dolphins. Chris, enjoy the game. Obviously, people can follow you at BuffaloBills.com. Thanks for joining us. Eric, as well. Guys, thanks for doing this today.
Enjoy the game. Stay cool, man.
Go Bills.
Thank you very much, guys. That is Chris Brown. That is Eric Wood. I'm Sal Capaccio. And this is Buffalo Bills football.
All right, welcome back to Countdown to Kickoff on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Nate Geary, Joe DiBiase are with you here in our Amherst studios. Going to bring you to about 12:30 when we hand things over to Eric Wood and John Murphy. Eric will have his weekly interview with Sean McDermott, so don't go anywhere around that time as well. Joe, you and I were planning to talk a little bit about Gregory Rousseau, then we got our segment got kind of clipped a little bit towards the end there. I'm still would like to touch base at least a little bit on this. And then I've got another question that I'd like to throw your way. So before I throw this question your way, your thoughts today on Gregory Rousseau, who is returning back to the stadium that he played in college at Miami. He's got a lot of family in for the game, as he mentioned earlier this week.
Yep.
No Boogie Basham, no Effie Obata, and no Harrison Phillips today. All 3 inactive. That means they're not going to be dressing as many defensive line as they at least they did last week. Do you expect to see a lot of Gregory Rousseau today?
I think you might see a lot of him at multiple positions. At least I wonder it. Because obvious passing situations. Who do you want in there standing next to that Oliver? Gregory Rousseau, I think it's a tough one because long term, you want him to focus in and key in on being that star edge rusher that the Bills have been searching for. On the short term, you might look at it and think, when I'm putting my four best pass rushers on the field today, well, who do you line up? Because to me, in that situation, Gregory Rousseau, because of how productive he was from the interior in college, I think today he is your second best rusher from the inside next to Ed Oliver. And you have the ends in Epinesa and Hughes and Addison to be able to throw other guys out on the edge if you wanted. So this will be an interesting look at that. Do the Bills want to deviate from having him just focus in on being that edge guy, or do you want to stick him in the middle because you think that's going to be the best four-man pressure you can generate on Tua on obvious passing situations? You mentioned earlier about his height also. Tua's not that tall.
No.
And Fa Obada gave you that height from the interior, that penetration, that quick speed to be able to infiltrate from the inside. And I think Rousseau has a lot of those same qualities, and I think that's what made him a great pass rusher up the middle at Miami. So I don't need to see him there all day by any means, but I think there's multiple different arguments for why, you know, a few snaps, you know, throw him in the middle there next to Ed Oliver, and I think that might work.
A real interesting note, Joe Biscaglia of The Athletic mentioned this on Twitter, and it's fascinating because if somebody had asked me the question, how much zone coverage did the Dolphins run in that Week 17 matchup against the Bills, I might not have like a number off the top of my head that I thought was right. In their first matchup last year in Week 2, where the Bills absolutely tore through the Dolphins, the Dolphins ran 70% man coverage during that game. In Week 17, they ran 41%, and they still got torn up. I wonder. This has sort of been the conversation, for the last 7 days?
Yep.
How much zone? We asked David Ferronis, who was on with us earlier from the Sun Sentinel. We sort of asked him like what he thought, and he thought that they need to adjust. They need to run more zone coverage. I think about their two corners, Byron Jones and Xavien Howard. They are good man corners.
And they paid those guys to run that style of defense.
On top of that, Joe, man corners, like, I don't know if the inverse sounds correct here, but if you have like zone corners, like Tre'Davious White, for instance, is a very good zone corner. You don't really want him running a ton of man looks. Josh Norman, right? In his heyday, when he was an all-pro, he was one of the best zone corners in the league, but you would not want him matched up in one-on-one in man coverage.
Right.
Is that the same? Like, does that inverse? Like, if you have a great man corner, asking him to play a lot of conservative zone looks seems like a waste of what you have.
Yeah, that's how I would look at it from the surface without really knowing the intricacies of the position to know, like, the type of adjustment when you're going from a heavy man defense to a heavy zone defense. But yeah, when I would look at it without knowing that, it's, all right, like, it could even be stubbornness on the Dolphins' side from their coaching. Like, Brian Flores not wanting to go to a zone coverage and asking less of Byron Jones and Xavien Howard because we paid you guys to be able to run this defense. We paid you guys to be able to go out there in one-on-one matchups against Stephon Diggs's of the world and be able to limit them, be able to shut them down. And if you can't do that, what are we paying you for? Because not to say that it's completely easy to just go out in free agency, find anybody off the street to play zone coverage for you, but what are we paying you to do this? Because otherwise, we can just go find a guy. We can go find anybody to go run zone coverage, and we can play adequately as good as you're doing it anyway. So, to me, I think I kind of want to see the Dolphins do something that they don't typically do, but it's more about the pressure for me. I think they could play zone, they could play man, they could play whatever they want, but if they can't generate a pass rush against Josh Allen today because of how good the receivers are and how strong his arm is, I think those guys are just eventually going to get open.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mentioned I was going to ask you a question. Who has more pressure on them today in this game? Is it Josh Allen or Tua Tagovailoa?
Tua.
I agree. Why Tua?
If he can't beat the Bills today, like if I'm the Dolphins, if I'm covering the Dolphins, if I'm a Dolphins fan, I am at home. I have an opportunity here to take a two-game lead on this division. If I seriously want to be considered in the conversation with the Bills at the top of the AFC and in this division, I need to beat them after they've had a down game coming to my building. Mm. And I've got the defense. I've got an upgraded weapons. I've got a good offensive line. Like, I've got enough around him. If he can't beat the Bills today, and he is limiting their offense, similarly to what he did last week against New England. Remember, he won that game against New England, quote, on one.
Yeah.
He lost them that football game.
I agree with that.
He threw an interception, a brutal interception late in the game that he only got bailed out by a red zone fumble by Patriots running back Damian Harris. If you follow that up by limiting your own offense, and that is what holds you back from beating the Bills. You know what I'm thinking about in Miami? It's, I can't beat Josh Allen with this quarterback.
I don't know who I can beat with this quarterback. It is really what you might come to if he's the reason you lose this game. It's time now to get connected with our fans. It's powered by Nextiva, the official communications partner, and by Premcom, the official telephone system of the Buffalo Bills. Power your business connection with Premcom. Let's go to Twitter. I posed the question there, and I'm getting a lot of feedback. Brandon on Twitter says, Tua has more individual pressure while the Bills have more pressure to win, which I think is probably the right take to have on this situation. We have... Brian, or Podcast Vince on Twitter says, it's pretty close, but I'll say Josh. A bad game for Tua won't move the panicky needle as much as it will if Josh does. It doesn't have to last, but I think it's there.
Mike Leone from Establish the Run, he just tweeted, Tua, Allen shouldn't have pressure, almost won an MVP, and he got a fat extension.
Do you know what's funny? Is people use those exact talking points to say he does have pressure. I agree with Mike.
To me, I look at those as, I agree with Mike, as those are reasons why, like, he's, at least job security-wise, he's secure. Is there pressure on Josh Allen to win and win big? Of course.
Yeah, sure.
But is there pressure on him where if he doesn't perform, he could be replaced?
Yeah, no.
No, it's you're in a different galaxy with that conversation. Tua, they pulled him twice for Ryan Fitzpatrick last year. I know Jacoby Brissett's not the greatest quarterback in the world, but he's a high-profile backup. And if he goes 4 or 5 games looking like he did in week one, Tua is not that far. He is not that many bad games, I think, from being replaced.
I would agree with you, and I also think if scoring 17 points in a game, they will lose a lot of football games if they're scoring 17 points a game.
They won't make the playoffs.
They won't make the playoffs. They will lose more than they win. I am very interested in how ultimately the Dolphins decided to play the situation. By not bringing back Fitzpatrick, you almost couldn't bring him back.
Well,
there wasn't
I
a world where you
come,
could.
He wouldn't have come back. He
and not after what they did.
Especially if he knew, like, if Miami is like, all right, we want to give you this deal. He's like, yeah, but Washington's offering me their starting quarterback.
So,
are you willing to do that?
Yeah.
Because I don't think you are. So, like, to me, Fitz was maybe never feasible for them to bring back. Brissett maybe, though, was about as good as they could do for a backup quarterback.
You think?
Short of actually replacing Tua. Like, they could have sat at 3 in the draft and took Trey Lance or Justin Fields. Like, they could have done that. But they decided we're going to stick with Tua. And to me, that is some commitment. But I do think they hedged. They hedged by signing Jacoby Brissett, one of the best backup quarterbacks they could have got their hands on. And they did hedge by trading back in the draft and acquiring future draft capital. To me, if Tua doesn't work out, they'll be able to go to that. They'll be able to say, all right, we need to move up in the draft to pick Tua's replacement. Good thing we picked up that extra first-round pick by trading down last year.
That to me, I don't know that I want that GM that took Tua to be the guy that takes the next quarterback.
I feel like he would be, though.
They are
I agree with you, but I feel like he would
they're
be.
They're safe.
Chris Greer.
Chris Greer and Brian Flores. Yep. But I'm not sure why.
I think they get a lot of credit for
not being an embarrassment anymore. Right. And I guess that's...
You know why they've gotten credit? Because they've exceeded our expectations 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Year one, they were supposed to be historically awful.
Yeah.
Did they win 6 games that year?
Yeah.
Five or six?
Yeah, they lost to the Ravens in that game, and we were thinking, oh, boy.
Remember, they left a good taste in our mouths by beating New England in Foxborough to stop them from having home field advantage through the playoffs.
Yep.
That was at the end of the 2019 season.
That was in that Kenyon Drake kickoff return.
Right. They were supposed to be the worst team in the league, and they weren't. They were the 5th worst team in the league. The next year, last year, it was supposed to be, all right, step forward, right? Playoff, maybe not even playoff contention, but like around a .500 record.
And they won 10 games.
They won 10 games. They were in it right to the very end. I think they exceeded our expectations last year also. Does that mean they have the right guys in place, though? Because if you're just looking at the wins-loss record, they got really lucky last year. They were one of the luckiest teams in the league with return yardage and turnovers and special teams. Like, to me, a lot of the things that they did that led them to victory last year are not necessarily repeatable, are not things that you can count on to happen year after year, game after game.
And you know teams that are built with their defense to win them football games, they don't translate year in and year out.
Right.
They don't. And
let alone special teams.
The thing, that I think would keep me up at night as a Dolphins fan is watching every single week watching Justin Herbert.
Oh, yeah.
That would just keep me up at night.
I mean, he is exactly what you want in a franchise quarterback today, right? Like, that's the new mold. That's the new wave. It's Allen. It's Mahomes.
He's
it
big.
Is
I just don't
Herbert.
Know. I think back to that draft, and I, for the life of me, can't figure out why, with the information they had available to them, you take Tua. And here's the thing, Joe. Well, if they had a chance to do it again, 10 times out of 10, they're taking Justin Herbert.
Oh, 100%.
100 times out of 100.
Yeah. They... I wonder if they cracked under pressure of, remember the year before?
Tank for Tua.
It had been over a year of buildup to that guy.
For them.
And they're sitting there with the chance to take him. And I wonder if they cracked under that pressure. To me, if that's true, though, I'm not saying that they did. If that's true, then they definitely are not the people that I would want employed if they were my team. You don't crack under pressure because you think that's what your fans want. You take the guy you think is going to be your franchise quarterback. To me, the Bills did that. The Bills took a guy that a lot of people were not happy with, but it worked. And they ended up taking the right guy because Josh Rosen stinks. So, to me, like, I would be very hesitant to think that the Dolphins have the right people in charge. But I think they'll get another swing. I don't think they'll draft a rookie, though. I think they'll go big. I still think Deshaun Watson's next snap is in that uniform. Would be my guess.
Yeah, it's just a it's a weird place for a franchise to be this early in a quarterback's development. Like, part of this too is the timeline was accelerated way too quickly by Brian Flores going to Tua last year.
Yeah.
There was no reason in the context of that season to go to Tua that early, especially knowing he was coming off of that hip injury.
And did
because
you...
that, they're still using that as an excuse.
Right.
Today. So what are you doing putting him in week 5 when the team and everyone around him believed in Fitzpatrick?
Winning record.
Winning record, yeah. Was playing well. You accelerated a conversation around a quarterback, fair or unfair. The expectations have now been increased due to the decision-making of their head coach.
It's one of the oddest coaching decision seasons
that I'll ever...
For a first-year quarterback ever.
Because and on top of that, Joe...
Pulling him a couple times is so weird.
Nobody really seems to want to criticize him for it.
Flores?
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe because a lot of people just don't think Tua is that good.
And I think a lot of people view the move of actually it kind of working in terms of wins and losses.
So
like, the product on the field, which is the result of these games, it kind of worked.
To me, the argument I made defending Flores last year was put Tua in now because I don't know, I want to know what he is. But then you saw what he is and you didn't act on it. So what was the point?
All right, we got to take a timeout. Other side, we'll continue this conversation. We'll also get you our fantasy segment coming up by Geico. This is Buffalo Bills football. All right, welcome back to our final segment of Countdown to Kickoff before kickoff here with Nate Geary and Joe DiBiase, getting you ready for the 1 p.m. kick between the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins with John Murphy and Eric Wood calling the play-by-play from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth. Today's game is presented by Independent Health. The red shirts are all about your health. Let's get a quick weather update from Joe if we can.
Looking at 87 as the high, 70%+ humidity, and around a 30 to 35% chance of precipitation throughout kickoff, throughout the game today between the Dolphins and the Bills. If you're a fan, though, remember they have that overhang. So that would be for the game itself, but if you are in attendance, if you're walking into the stadium now listening to us or getting ready to, then you should be good and dry all day, but it'll be hot. Weather in Miami brought to you by Sullivan's Brewing Company, from Ireland to Buffalo, the best ales in the world. While we're at at it, let's get you the injury update brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Star Lotulelei returns from injury with a calf injury. He will play and will start in today's game. F.A. Obada, who was questionable coming into today's game with an ankle injury, is inactive. Although, I did say this earlier, I don't think that has to mean the injury is what kept him out. I think maybe Obada could have played today, and he just would have been a healthy scratch anyway because of how deep they are at, on the defensive line.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. It's more than likely he would have been the healthy scratch. I was interested to see Harrison Phillips as a healthy scratch, but
yeah,
and maybe it's just more so I think he's a better player than Vernon Butler is, but they put money into Vernon Butler, so maybe that's right. I typically wouldn't give the benefit of the doubt to a guy who's making money, and not in this team. But I don't know.
Last year, I think of Trent Murphy immediately. He was making a lot of money last year and was inactive all the time.
All the time.
So, yeah, I don't know. By the way, quick stats I was just looking up in the break.
Ah, yes.
Devontae Parker is the only player to have 200-yard receiving games against McDermott's Bills.
Interesting.
And Mike Gesicki with the second most productive day among tight ends against the Bills under McDermott. 130 yards on 8 catches and a touchdown last year in week 2. Although, we were talking about him for fantasy earlier in the break, he played 39% of snaps for Miami last week, Mike Gesicki, and did not catch a football. So, while, yeah, he was super productive against the Bills last year, I mean, you might not even see him today. They're getting Adam Shaheen back in the lineup,
yeah,
one of their other tight ends that didn't play last week. Like, Gesicki might just be a non-factor, even though he was so good against Buffalo last year.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting day today, to say the least, with how the target share for the Dolphins works out and how it works out for the rest of the season. I was surprised about Gesicki not getting a catch last week. 3 targets, yeah. 39% of the snaps, no catches.
I wonder if that's because, and we talked about this with our guest earlier, the way they use Jaylen Waddle. He has played, they were using him in the slot. A lot of his snaps coming from the slot, a lot of underneath routes, a lot of over the middle slants. Like, they used him. Remember the way they used Dallas used CeeDee Lamb in his rookie year?
Yeah.
Like, exclusively in the middle, inside. Yeah. And that's where Mike Gesicki wins, like, up the seams. And if they're using Jaylen Waddle and going to Jaylen Waddle there, he's obviously a much more dynamic player, not just because of his position, but because of the style he is at receiver. Gesicki might be becoming a non-factor because when Tua's looking over the middle, he's going to throw to Waddle.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I hadn't quite thought about the why he might not being targeted falls outside of him just not being a good blocker. Like, he's a liability as a blocker, which is part of the reason he's not. And the guys they've drafted tell you they're looking for more of an inline blocker, a guy that can play a traditional tight end role, and they don't really want to feature. He's essentially a big slot. And if he's a big slot and you just invested a first-round pick in Jaylen Waddle, you're not going to put him in the slot over Waddle.
Isn't that was part of the argument as to why the Bills didn't need to go trade for Zach Ertz this offseason.
Yeah.
Because, big slot. I've got Cole Beasley. What do I really need that for? Just because he's listed at a different position?
Yeah.
Didn't make a lot of sense. They didn't do it, though.
They did not.
So they're good.
Happy, and I think we're all probably better for it, to be quite honest. I think
he'd be nice to have here, but it sounded like the Eagles were... they wanted a lot.
How about the Eagles last week? Is it surprising to you?
Was it more of an Eagles thing for you or a Falcons thing for you? They looked good, but man, the Falcons are kind of a disaster.
They stink.
No, but Hurts really looked like he was throwing with anticipation. He was
throwing
guys open.
Devontae Smith looked good.
Yeah,
I mean, the defense looked really good, too.
Bad division.
Dallas Goedert.
Bad division.
That's right.
They have a shot.
They do have a shot. Absolutely, they have a shot. I am interested a little bit today in the... who does Dallas play? Dallas plays...
Pittsburgh. No, sorry. That's the Raiders.
Dallas
Chargers.
Plays, oh, right.
Yes.
That is going
Chargers.
To be... Oh, my God. Buy all of the fantasy people in that game. Just, buy them all.
Yes.
Like
Isn't that every Dallas game, though, really? Because the defense is so bad.
So bad. In fantasy, I actually had to change my daily fantasy, my DFS lineup, because I realized that I had Justin Herbert, Austin Eckler, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, and Jared Cook all in my lineup.
Oh,
and I was like,
God.
Wait a second.
That might work.
I can't have 5 people from the...
Well, today, maybe.
Yeah.
Today, there might be enough to go around for that. But, yeah, usually, no. I was impressed by the Chargers week 1. Like, they weren't even their best on offense, and they were good. They were good against Washington. I don't think they're on the Bills tier in the AFC, but I think that's probably a playoff team. And that's a 425 game. Cowboys, I'd imagine we're getting that game here, right?
I believe the Cowboys.
Like, it's automatic that they're on. So that'll be a game I'm watching very closely after, because that's a team that, especially with the Titans stumbling and the Colts stumbling, like, a lot of people in the AFC stumbled last week.
They did.
The Chargers didn't. Like, that could be a team on the rise that threatens the Bills, the Browns, and the Chiefs at the top.
100%. I would wonder, too. This is going to be a crazy question. I can't believe I'm even asking.
Go for it. That means it's a good one, I think.
What if the Raiders beat the Steelers today?
Do you want the Raiders to beat the Steelers?
Wouldn't
that look worse for the Bills?
Agree that it would look worse. I don't know. What if the Raiders are decent?
I can't believe it either. I refuse to believe it. John Gruden was... I hate that they won that football game. He was putting his field goal unit out with 4 minutes to go in overtime on 2nd and 9 from 44 yards away. Not a chip shot by any means. And he took a false or a delay a game penalty because, of course, the kicker was nowhere to be found, because he's probably thinking, why would I be going out in the field right now? And then Derek Carr bails him out with a touchdown to Zay Jones, of all people, at the end. That team is so dumb, but, like... Whatever. Like, fine. Go beat the Steelers, I guess. I don't want to see the Steelers in the wild card round, so I guess I would be rooting for the Raiders. That's way down the line, though.
Yeah, you fast forwarded for real on that one. But yeah. It'd be super interesting to me to watch them beat Pittsburgh. And they absolutely could, by the way.
Mm-hmm. The overall point, though, to be made here is, who's good in the AFC? Who can you really be that confident in being good?
Everybody talks about how deep it is. How deep is it?
I am confident that the Chiefs are unbelievable.
Yes.
The Browns, I have a lot of respect for right now.
Me too.
I still believe the Bills are right there.
But can I tell you about why I fall short on the Browns?
Why?
They're a run-first team. And I'm not going to buy. I'm not overly hyped about a team that plays against the analytics.
That is why I would have the Bills above them.
I agree.
I cannot. There's no one else in the conference right now that I think you can even begin to put third above Cleveland. Because a lot of the other teams.
Do you know who it is? It's the Chargers. You got to argue that.
They got to do it for a little bit longer for me.
What about Denver?
I could get to a point this year because of the way the Chargers are operating and Justin Herbert on offense. They could surpass the Browns for me, but not yet. Not yet for me.
Denver is going to be 2-0 after they beat Jacksonville today.
I just can't get with Bridgewater.
No,
he's Tyrod Taylor. How does he play the position?
I'd rather have Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod gives you more in the rushing game.
Yeah.
And honestly, he's a better deep ball passer than Bridgewater is. So to me, like, he's fine. He's not going to lose them football games. But I can't get with a caretaker at that position.
Yeah,
anymore.
I'm with you.
I need a guy that can push the ball down the field.
Listen, let's get into fantasy because we've got some stuff to talk about. So time now for our Geico Fantasy segment. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's playbook for over 85 years. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com today and see all the ways you can save. So, Joe, before we hone in on this game today, I wanted to touch base quickly with you on the Titans. And they're on the screen now.
Yep.
And I'm wondering how disappointing and how scared off people might now be of AJ Brown and Julio Jones after that week one performance. It was bad. The offensive line was bad. I was not expecting them to lose as badly as they were, and for them to get no garbage time, like zero garbage time production,
yeah,
blew my mind. I'm thinking to myself, in that game they're down 38 whatever, and I'm thinking, okay, well, at least AJ Brown will get some garbage time touches.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Well, think about the way they've been successful under Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill's been one of most efficient quarterbacks in the league. Exactly. Play action. They go up against 8-man boxes because the other teams are intimidated by Derrick Henry, and then they run play action, and Tannehill drops back to pass, and he's got one-on-one matchups all over the place, especially with A.J. Brown. They abandoned that.
Abandoned
in week one.
And you know what? I said this from the beginning in fantasy at the beginning of this year in the draft, which is why I stayed away from Tennessee Titans players.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Smith, his play calling, he built that offense up to what it was, and you don't just pass it off to somebody else and expect the same amount of success. And they moved almost exclusively away from what they did well last year.
Todd Downing, their offensive coordinator this year, who was formerly with the Raiders. That's his previous play calling experience.
Yeah, and he was not good there.
No, and there was not a high level of play action. Like, it was not, they should have been trying to stick to what they had been good at. And instead, they looked like they were trying to do something else. And to me, it's not a surprise that it went that way. They, by the way, if you want the numbers on that, they ran play action on 36%. Of their snaps in 2020. That was the highest rate in the league. Week one, 11.6%, the lowest. They literally went from first to last in play action. So if that's going to continue, I've liked Tannehill there, but it's a lot of those reasons. If he's just going to stand back there and shotgun and throw the ball 40 times a game, I don't think that's going to work even with your receivers being that good. I just don't think Tannehill is that good of a quarterback to pull off an offense like that. We'll see if Derrick Henry, though, can kind of help get them back into their normal offense, because he did not look right in week one, and I've wondered about him because of the workload that he's had. He has got so many carries on that body going back to Alabama as a workhorse. He's going to degrade, I think, at some point, but I'm not ready to say that it's happening yet for him. I don't like the Titans.
I don't like the Titans either.
But who do you like in that division?
But here's the thing about that fantasy matchup last week. You had to be salivating if you're an owner of A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
Who plays corner for the Cardinals? Malcolm Butler's not playing right now.
I don't even know then.
I don't know either.
Well, that's good.
And for them to score 13 points against nobody in that second. Now, Chandler Jones did have 5 sacks, including 3 in the first freaking quarter.
Yeah.
So there's some context for you, but holy cow. All right, elsewhere around the league, let's start. Ooh, this is another good one for today. And if you have fantasy questions, by the way, we will absolutely take your tweets. You could tweet at me, at Nate Gary Sports, or at Sneaky Joe as well. Both of us will take or answer any fantasy questions you have. You could also give us a shout, 803-0550. We can rapid fire through some phone calls as well. I was interested in your thoughts on the Cincinnati Bengals' big win in week one. They beat the Vikings.
It's a good win for them.
And Ja'Marr Chase looked like a guy who was grossly undervalued during normal fantasy drafts because people were scared off by the dropsies.
He was not having a good training camp.
He's
going to
be
like
a top 15 receiver, it sounds like, in fantasy.
I would be bullish on him right now. I think the guy I'd be fading is probably Tyler Boyd.
Yeah.
Because T. Higgins was their target leader before he exited the game in the third quarter. So if I were ranking their receivers 1, 2, 3 right now, it would be Higgins, then Chase, and then probably a gap, and then Tyler Boyd, especially because Boyd is more of that possession level player, where Chase and Higgins, Chase more so though, gives you the big upside for big plays. The yards after the catch ability for Chase is just so good that I would be incredibly comfortable starting both of the Bengals' top receivers.
Also, I am pretty down on Allen Robinson right now in Chicago with Andy Dalton at quarterback.
Dalton did not attempt a pass.
Wild.
Over 25 yards.
It's wild.
Didn't even attempt one.
I wonder, truly,
offense,
are they doing?
Not the whole offense. I actually like the tight end Cole Kmet if they're going to keep playing Andy Dalton. But Darnell Mooney, their other starting wide receiver, is a burner that wins down the field. And Allen Robinson, even though he's just been all-around great player, he wins deep a lot as well. And if you're not even going to try those big plays, I would. I mean, if you drafted Allen Robinson, though, you're playing him just because of where you drafted him. And he'll probably have a good game for you. I mean, last week even, what was it, like 7 catches for 50 yards or whatever it is? Like, he'll give you one of those days, I think, at minimum. So I would not bench Robinson, but, man, you got to be hoping Justin Fields gets in at some point. Revenge game, though, for Dalton. I doubt they would do it against Cincinnati for him.
Yeah, probably
but
not.
But maybe as soon as next week. And once Fields gets in there, Robinson could explode. Like, I'm not trading him. I'm holding, hoping that it goes as good as possible while Dalton's the quarterback. And then, boom, when Fields comes in, I'd be expecting big things.
Here's another good one for you. Are you as terrified as other fantasy owners who are big on Brandon Ayuk? I traded Ayuk in the two leagues that I had him in for running back help.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty good about it early on here, but I suspect he gets integrated back in that offense and starts to have a bigger impact as a wide receiver too in that offense. But let's not kid ourselves here. The number one receiver in that room is Deebo Samuel, and the number two is George Kittle.
The only two things you can be sure about with Kyle Shanahan on that offense is that Kittle is the tight end you want, and Samuel is the receiver you want. I don't even know what quarterback you want. Who threw the touchdown last week? It was Trey Lance. Running back, it was Elijah Mitchell. But I don't trust Kyle Shanahan at all. I would, if you can, if you have good alternatives, I would be sitting Brandon Ayuk just to get a look at it. Just to see, all right, is he truly going to return as their number two wide receiver? And then if he does, all right, now I'm comfortable playing him. Same thing with Elijah Mitchell. You probably spent a lot in the waiver wire picking him up.
Yeah.
I would want to wait a week. I would want to wait a week. I don't trust, Kyle Shanahan is just one of those coaches. I don't trust him week to week. Yes, Mitchell was great last week. I don't think it would be surprising if Mitchell had two carries today. Mm-hmm. And Trey Sermon was being featured despite being inactive last week. That is just who Kyle Shanahan
That's
is.
Right.
He wants to keep you on edge. He doesn't want to let you know what he's doing. So any 49er that's not Kittle and isn't Samuel, I would be hold for a week, make sure you know what their role is, and then I would feel more comfortable playing them.
Yeah.
That would go for Ayuk and for Elijah Mitchell.
It's just, it was weird to watch Ayuk be featured in that offense at the end of last year with Deebo Samuel on the shelf
he was
and
awesome.
No George Kittle. He was fantastic. But you can see when the rest of the pieces are healthy, he's deprioritized in that offense, and it's it could just be a Shanahan thing. The same way you're talking about with the running backs, he's been weird and has sounded weird when asked about Ayuk the last week.
He said he has to learn how to be a pro.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that means.
That to me,
that's a weird quote.
He has to learn how to be a pro. The guy is in his second year. He was great for you in year one. I think he knows how to be a pro. I think there's something going on that you don't want to tell us, is what that
That's what I think is. It is, too. We got a question from Robert on Twitter. Cortland Sutton or Elijah Mitchell for the flex this week?
I'm worried about
Cortland Sutton.
I am, too. But Jerry Jeudy is out. The Broncos have Jacksonville this week. That's a good matchup.
That is a good matchup.
Brandon Cooks last week went
off
with Tyrod as his quarterback.
And I'll say this for Elijah Mitchell, or maybe to double down on Cortland Sutton here, the Eagles' deep run defense looks good. That front four is good.
I would be on Sutton there.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's grab
a phone call, too, while we're here. Let's go to Scott in Westfield. Scott, you're on Countdown to Kickoff here with Nate and Joe in our fantasy segment. What do you got for us?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Go Bills.
Go Bills.
Go Bills.
Yeah, I'm very new at fantasy. This is my first year. And I picked up Mitchell this week. He just got that done talking about him, so he kind of answered my question. And I have a flex position. I was going to bench Julio Jones, who did nothing last week for me, and put in Mitchell. Is that a bad move?
I don't think it's a bad move.
That one's close for me.
It's
that
a tough one.
Really close for me. I would go with Julio. They traded for him. I think the Titans should feel embarrassed if they can't get him the ball through two games.
I agree. And I think what's scaring me off, Scott, is just how good the Eagles' front four was last week. I think they've got one of the best front fours in football. I think I agree with Julio Jones, but man, that leash, the quotes, I don't know. There was a personal foul penalty, and Mike Vrabel kind of threw Julio Jones under the bus during his postgame press conference, or maybe it was Monday press conference. Yeah, like it wasn't good. But Julio Jones, I think you have to start. It sucks. If it were me, I wouldn't want to, but I think
Seattle gets in these games, too, where they kind of develop into shootouts, even though they maybe don't plan on it. So
Let me throw one quick thing in here, Scott, if you're still listening. Weather's going to be a factor today in Seattle. 60 and raining in Seattle.
Ooh, really?
That's something
I need to start looking at, is like the weather.
The only reason I know this is I was listening to Mike Schopen the Bulldog on Thursday when John Clayton was on, and he said he's not going to the game today because the weather is supposed to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So something to think about in that matchup. I think in a normal condition game, it's Julio Jones. The problem with me picking Elijah Mitchell is I just don't know. I can't predict what Shanahan's going to do.
Exactly. Sermon, by the way, was not even active last week. So you don't know what his role would look like. To me, why I'd be scared off of him for this week is, did he look at Mitchell as a compliment to Raheem Mostert? And then Mostert went down with injury, and it was just, okay, well, I don't have Sermon active. Like, maybe he would view Sermon as Mostert's replacement and continue to have Mitchell be the compliment. But last week, he didn't have Mostert's replacement available to him, so he had to go with the compliment piece. That's what I would wonder. Does he still view Mitchell as a compliment to a Trey Sermon type, or does he think Mitchell can be that every down back like Raheem Mostert was for them? And with that guy, especially Kyle Shanahan, you are just flipping a coin. And I would rather go with Julio Jones than flip a coin.
Let's go to Andrew in Rochester, who's got a guillotine question. I saw that on the screen, and I'm ready to give him the stage. Andrew, what do you got, man?
Thank you so much for answering my call. Yeah, I'm in a really tight spot. You know, week one, I drafted James Robinson, so I don't feel here already. But for wide receivers, I'm looking for two here. I need to pick between Terrace Marshall Jr. from Carolina, Cedric Wilson from Dallas, Bryan Edwards from Las Vegas, or Michael Pittman. And I need two of them and just in a hole after that James Robinson pick.
Yeah, James Robinson, I trust me, buddy, I'm with you on that. He's killing me in a league right now. And it doesn't look like it's getting better for him, by the way, because Carlos Hyde looks like the guy they're prioritizing there for some ungodly reason.
Pittman, by the way, is banged up, though, coming into this game. I know he's playing.
And Pascal had two touchdowns last week. Only two touchdowns.
He said two there?
Yeah.
I would make one of the two Bryan Edwards.
I think I would agree with that, too.
He had five targets, four catches for 81 yards. He was definitely the Derek Carr's number two option behind Darren Waller with like 1,000 targets.
Ugh.
I'd go Edwards. I'd go to Edwards over Pittman.
I'd go Edwards as well. And then was there a second one in there? Who else was...
I would just go Edwards and Pittman.
Yeah, Edwards and Pittman, I think, the way to go. Right, before we pass things off to John Murphy and Eric Wood, quickly, in this game, who do you like fantasy-wise from this this matchup today?
I mean, Diggs, obviously, Allen, obviously.
I like Beasley a lot today.
Beasley had 13 targets last week. He's good in PPR. On the Dolphins side, go for Myles Gaskin. He led them in catches last week with five.
I expect Myles Gaskin to have a big week as well. Stay tuned. Coming up next on Countdown to Kickoff, Eric Wood talks to head coach Sean McDermott, brought to you by Speed Global Services. Around the corner or around the world, Speed delivers. Okay, Bills kickoff. 40 minutes from now, 35. Enjoy. Go Bills.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.